Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric C. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 50. How are you guys doing there?
I don't know what this voice is you're doing now. Are you trying to be me?
I don't think that's possible.
Well, I know it's not. It's hard enough for me to do it.
I have revealed to you my talented Mr. Ripley plans.
You'd have. It'll never happen.
You don't know that.
I do know that.
There's an eventual date in mind for our boat ride.
Okay.
Then all I have to do is find one of your cowboy hats and boom.
Because that's really all it takes, huh?
Just transform.
You're just fixated on cowboy hats, because now you can see that cowboy hat in the picture.
The picture is literally like 60 pixels by 60 pixels.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would make me... Those 60 pixels would make me think of it.
I mean, like 14 of those pixels are a cowboy hat, so...
Mm-hmm. That's enough. That's about how many are in your cowboy hat picture.
I have a cowboy hat picture?
Mm-hmm. On G Plus.
Oh, that's true. I'm macho man.
Yep, you're the macho man.
Who also has a cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. of sorts.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more bedazzled than yours.
A little bit more bedazzled, but my day will come.
Are you planning on getting a bedazzled cowboy hat?
Well, I mean, I haven't ruled it out.
Okay, I think that is one thing you should never exclude.
I was going to say, you know, anything can happen.
One day, you may just need that.
I think that I am going to get a suit. It's going to be somewhere between, like a Hank Williams suit, Hank Williams Sr. suit, combined with like Ozzy Osbourne, you know, in the Blizzard of Oz era.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
So that's, I think that's how I need to dress in the future.
Are you going
to
eat bats?
Well, yes, but not raw.
Okay.
It's just gross.
Cooked bats. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
You need a rabies shot if you did that.
I mean, I'm a foodie.
But that's all the raw food movement, isn't it? Something people do? Eat things raw?
I think the raw food movement is vegan. I don't think there's raw meat.
What about
the people that eat raw meat get diseases?
What about sashimi? Sashimi.
Sashimi is acceptable to eat, but it's prepared. It's not just flat out raw.
What about steak tartare?
So it's okay.
Or
these are the exceptions that prove the rule. Most food, as you may realize, is cooked.
This is
some epic dicking around.
Now that you mention it, most food I eat is cooked.
Okay.
Good. So, this is episode 50. That's kind of neat. That's like a big, giant, round number.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's not as exciting as our season-ending number, episode 52, spectacular. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we're finally talking about this.
Where we're going to, you know, talk about the state of the comics industry. Or something.
Yep. For a change.
I know.
We're talk about comics.
We never... We're going to mix it up a little bit with you guys. A couple episodes now, we're going to talk about comic books. All right. I think it's time for checking in.
I think it's definitely time to stop us.
Stop this insanity. Eric, you are a constant enigma and a riddle. So I'm very curious what you're checking in with this week.
My life is just torment and pain.
Wow. All right.
Torment
and pain is a good thing. That's a good thing. What are we talking about that?
No. Well, I mean, speaking of torment and pain, it does actually relate with what I was going to check in with,
okay.
Which is there's like a whole second wave of Cartoon Network shows that are on Netflix now.
I've noticed.
Yeah, and I had to recap all of Regular Show, which I've reversed myself on Regular Show. I'm very much coming around, as dumb as it seems, or as dumb as it is, because it is dumb. It is crazy dumb. It's still very enjoyable. I think more than anything, it makes me want to read the comics. So I think I've got to pick me up some Regular Show skips and go back and revisit some of the comics. But, you know, what I think is even more interesting is I rewatched season 2 of Venture Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen all the Venture Brothers?
I've seen up through season 4 or 5. One of the two. I can't remember.
I don't even know that I've seen season 5.
One of the two.
I honestly don't. I don't remember my own self, but it was a real blast from the past just to watch, particularly those last two episodes. Showdown at Cremation Creek 1 and 2.
With Bowie shows up.
With Bowie. And I thought it was like really cool and well telegraphed that Bowie was the villain.
Yes.
But it was really stupid to me that they threw in Klaus Nomi and Iggy Pop.
I don't know.
You don't know who Iggy Pop is?
I do know who Iggy Pop is. Thank you very much. He's a lunatic. Okay.
He's a street walking cheetah with a heart full of napalm.
That is very true.
It's a factual statement.
Yes, he is
literally a street walking cheetah with a heart full of napalm.
My last frame of reference for Iggy Pop was I listened to the WTF when Marc Maron interviewed him.
Oh my God.
And Iggy Pop, it was in Maron's garage where he does most of his interviews.
Yes.
Iggy did not wear a shirt.
Of course.
And he absentmindedly rubbed his nipples while doing the interview.
Seems you told me that.
I probably have, but I think it's important to bring it up again. He's a man who just, you know, he does interviews and he is still shirtless and rubbing his nipples.
Well, I mean, everybody's gotta have a hobby.
Right. So Venture Brothers season 2.
I guess the larger thing I wanted to talk about it is just how strange it felt to watch something. 2006 feels like 100 million years ago watching that, and also like it just happened.
Yeah.
Do you get that?
It's weird.
Yes.
It's nostalgia for something that, I don't know, 8 years is quite a long time.
It doesn't feel like it's been that long, but that's almost, it's been almost a decade since I was watching Venture Brothers. Since I was watching those episodes.
I was in college and I watched them as they were released new on Adult Swim. Cause I
right.
could stay up till 3 a.m. every night and I, you know, did. So I could watch Venture Brothers at midnight or whatever. But it's strange. I'm like, I don't even watch anything at midnight anymore or anything on television at all.
Oh, you know, 8 years of, having to get up at 7 or 6 or 5 in the morning, it'll breed that right out of you.
Yes, let's go to bed at 9:30.
Well, you know, I was asleep when you called me earlier. That's about.
That's all you got?
That's about all I got. Okay. There is something that I'm spending my time on, but it is a secret.
Ooh, I like that. That's special. It's fun. You get secret. You hear that, folks? Will Eric reveal his secret next week? Who knows? Tune in. I have a pretty late week myself.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I've been away partying hardy at a wedding all weekend. So that has been most of my free time is getting drunk at weddings. But
I mean, there's certainly worse ways to spend your life.
Yeah. In St. Augustine, that's very pretty. But I want to do touch on a video game that I had bought a while back in a Humble Bundle. And I have played quite a bit, and I definitely recommend it. I do not know how to pronounce it. I'm going to guess botanicula.
Is it like, it's like banicula?
Or botanicula, one or the other. It's I'm guessing the root is botany, so it's botanicula. Cause it's all about, it reminds me of like, flower or flow.
Mm-hmm.
Those games a little bit. Also, like, the Grow games, those Flash games you can play online. There's, like, a whole series of them. They're Grow, a dozen iterations of that. But it's very, very, very gorgeous game. It takes place, like, and it's a very kind of simple layout. It takes place on this tree, kind of ethereal-looking tree. And this evil creature is, like, infecting the tree, killing it, stealing its essence or whatever. And you're these, like, a little team of bugs that are prowling around the tree trying to, you know, stave off this dark creature and, like, solve little puzzles and riddles and experiment with, you click different things. And the art style is really unique and fun. You collect, like, if you, like, click on everything, you encounter, like, little fun animations of all of these different creatures who live in this tree. And, you collect little cards, you know, that you have a little set of like interesting creatures that you've encountered. And, there's all these little bugs have little different abilities. Like one has a wing, one is like a twig bug, so it can extend itself. Another one is like big and clunky, so it barges through things. One is low to the ground, so it can scoot under different things. It's really cute and fun.
Is it kind of like, Pikmin, or is it more like, it almost sounds like you're describing a game like, what is it called? The Three Vikings?
It's not even, it's very on the precipice of a game at all. Like, it's not.
It feels more like a toy.
Yeah, it's like it has like almost an adventure-y kind of feel where you're just going through these different places trying to collect. Oh, well, you need 5 keys. So you go around the tree and find 5 keys, come back, unlock something, and it gets you somewhere else.
So it's a little bit like Fez in that, right? That it's just sort of about exploring and feels kind of aimless.
A little bit. I mean, there's definitely points you go, oh, there's a bad guy right there, so I can't go that way. I have to find a way around him or stuff like that. But it's not like it's complex puzzles. You just click on things until the good things happen, like the thing you need happens. But it's really gorgeous and it's very cute and fun. And like, this kid was sitting next to me while I was playing. Like, early on in the game, you get the map of the tree, but the map, as you explore things, it's a leaf. It's like this translucent leaf, and the lines of the tree come out, like, as lines of light in this leaf.
Hmm.
And it's so beautiful, so gorgeous, and all the design is really nice. I don't think it's obviously, it's not a heavy game, but it's very beautiful and a lot of fun and cute.
So this is why you had to build that PC.
No, I've also been playing Legends of Amalur, but I've only gotten like a couple hours in, and I'm assuming that game takes like 100 hours to beat, so I don't think I can get a good enough gameplay in on to adequately judge it.
Well, you can judge it anyway.
It's fun so far.
I see a guy with a hammer. I'm looking up Legends of Amalur.
It looks looks a lot like WoW.
Well, have you looked at WoW? This looks a little bit better.
Well, I mean, the newest expansion to WoW.
Then maybe I've not looked at WoW.
They've upgraded it.
It seems like they would have to because
the original
it
WoW
came
was
out in
awful.
Like what 2004.
No, the newest as the new expansions have come out, they make the graphics look better. And like the panda one.
Yes,
that one actually it looks similar to that. I know they try and the WoW teams have been slowly backtracking and upgrading models and stuff, the older content, but I don't know. I don't really keep too much eye on that. No, but Legend of Amalur, it's very nice looking. I mean, not necessarily looks exactly like WoW, but it has that same kind of feel in its graphic design.
It's got some wowiness.
Yeah.
Such WoW.
It's fun so far. It's a big open. It famously bankrupted. It's the 38 Studios lost like $60 million on it and went bankrupt. Kurt Schilling was a big, our buddy Todd McFarlane is in on the design.
Well, now I hate it.
uh, that's all I got. Botanicula, that's really want to check in. Go buy it. It's a lot of fun. It's probably like $5-$10.
It is not Banicula.
I didn't say Banicula. I said Botanicula.
Well, I've said Banicula again.
Okay, well,
Banicula.
It is not a story about a bunny Dracula.
Yes, it is not.
I don't want anyone to be... Don't get confused. It is not a story about Bunny Dracula. It is time for the floppiest part of the week. It is time for Weekly Floppies. Weekly Floppies is the part of the show where Eric and I take a look at the week's books and tell you to buy or do not buy them. And you should listen to what we say. We're smart fellas.
Well, you should definitely listen to what I say. It's optional whether you want to listen to Robbie.
We generally agree, so it's
we not do like... generally agree, but that's when you know he's serious.
Other times, I'm just fucking around.
Oh, good Lord.
Good Lord.
I think we're both delirious.
It might be it. Our first book of the week is Justly United, number 0. The first of two books that are numbered 0, which really doesn't make any sense when you think about it.
It's fine.
Okay. It is written by Jeff Lemire, art by Mike McCone, colors by Marcelo Maialo, letters Carlos M. Mangual. This is the first issue of the new Justice League team, which is, they call it Justice League United because they don't want to call it Justice League Canada.
Because it even says Justice League Canada, like, inside.
Yes. and it has a maple leaf on the cover.
On the cover. Oh, man.
We can't
call it Justice League Canada. That would just be gross.
It would be. This is the kind of team formative book with them kind of introducing all these different heroes who are, like, supposed to be, you know, forming this team. Obviously, you get Animal Man himself, Sparkle Girl, whatever.
Star Girl.
So Star Girl and Animal Man are at a comic book convention.
Clearly, because that's how I read that too.
I mean, they say real life celebrity superheroes. This is a comic book convention.
It's
obviously
a comic book convention.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's in costume. There's a guy dressed up as Superman. I don't know what to, I mean. But a anthropologist for some reason comes to the superheroes. I need some help. I found this weird skull, and then shenanigans ensue with lots of superheroes. Martian Manhunter shows up. Green Arrow shows up. You get an appearance by a metrosexual Lobo.
I think that's how we distinguish them.
Metro Lobo.
Yeah, Metro Lobo and Lemmy Lobo.
Lemmy Lobo, yeah, that's it. And then Hawkman, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, Hawkeye is in this one.
I'm not sure I know Jeff Lemire he wrote Animal Man and he's been writing the Green Arrow. I don't know how he got the rest of these guys on this team. Like, were they just, there's like a list of guys he could use and just went, here, you can use these people.
I think that whenever there's a new Justice League, they send Martian Manhunter. He's like every Justice League's big brother. He's like the prefect of every Justice League.
I've been in 16 Justice Leagues. This is how we do it, all right?
Yeah. I know something about the Justice League.
I've been in every iteration of the Justice League since 1964.
Yeah, he's the Justice League hall monitor.
Guys, come on. This is not how Justice Leagues work.
Stop fucking around, Animal Man.
Animal Man, Green Arrow, there's civilians present.
I don't know why Animal Man makes me want to start singing Werewolves of London.
Ah, woo!
I think it's because his hair is perfect. That's, like, when I hear that line, that's his haircut is what I think of.
Really?
Yeah, it looks like that. That's what that looks like.
His hair is pretty perfect.
It's pretty amazing.
I think it's his head wear thing. It frames it perfectly.
It does. Really, it does.
He doesn't have to do anything to it if he just wears that little mask that captures it.
It hides none of his face, makes his hair perfect.
Exactly. There's some plot here about, like, alien genetic messing around with, like, people, like baby people, baby aliens, and
baby
like,
baby people.
Baby people. Baby
those are aliens. Those are just called babies.
Just babies. I mean, if, but to an alien, a baby alien is still a baby person.
That's true.
But you don't really get into much of it. It's really more of just this is kind of like, here's a MacGuffin to get these people.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's
together.
It's a little bit clunky as far as first issues go, but it's not like, it's not terrible. It just sort of feels like, oh, the gang's all here.
I know. And there are like these alien things that shoot their arms, their rocket arms at people.
And the scariest face ever.
Yes.
Do you remember of what I speak? Oh my God. When did they decide to make Green Arrow exactly like Hawkeye? I've already made that joke, but I seriously have to ask.
I don't know. He's popular, so let's do it.
I guess that's really stupid. I mean,
it's really have, like it's even closer to the. I think it's more of them going after the Arrow television show.
Must be.
He also looks. I mean, he looks exactly like, almost exactly like that in the show.
Mm.
And it's very popular.
That's a real shame because I really liked. I really liked the old Queen.
Yeah, the Robin Hood-esque.
Yeah, I thought he was cool.
I did too.
And I liked how he was like a weird, I don't know that you'd call him a socialist, but he was certainly very outspoken about his politics. And I enjoyed that. I don't know. I thought he was an interesting character.
Yeah. I have no problem with their television show other than they only use Batman villains. Cause that's all the art is nice enough.
No, it's good. It's serviceable.
Yeah. I like it.
It feels like the kind of artist Jeff Lemire would pick out. No thoughts on that.
I don't know what you mean, so explain it.
It just sort of has that sort of Animal Man feel to me. You know, not necessarily like an Albuquerque, but not so far removed. It just feels like someone that Jeff Lemire would be comfortable with based on the people that he's worked with. It looks good.
There is a strange like animal totem guy briefly appearing in this. So maybe that's Jeff Lemire writes comic books where there's just weird guys who transform into weird animal monster things.
Mm-hmm. He's got to. It really is. That's right after the scariest face ever.
That is a yeah. That's
it's horrifying. You know what? Actually, it looks like Matt Smith. Another appearance by Matt Smith.
Not as much as that Spider-Man Matt Smith.
Not as much, but you gotta admit, if Matt Smith was a horrifying monster, he'd look a lot like that guy.
If
he was like, the Wendigo is here!
Have you not seen Doctor Who? He's a horrifying monster in that.
He's not a horrifying monster, but he does have a face made out of elbows.
That's awful.
That's what his friends used to say to him.
That's the worst thing. I like it.
Yeah, I think we've honestly talked way too long
about it because it's not actually as good as how much we've talked about it.
No, it's not. It's not so bad that I would say don't buy it, but I think Jeff Lemire can do some interesting things with it. It's setting interesting things up. It is a little bit, oh, the gang's all here. Not really a great story. It just, I believe the word MacGuffin was dropped.
It was.
It, yeah. Yes.
But I'm a buy because I'll support Lemire's work.
Knowing
what he has done with other things that he's written.
Right. That's about where I've landed that, now that Animal Man has, sort of wrapped up. I don't know. It's gotta go somewhere else and, I'm encouraged by this. It doesn't make me want to vomit, but I'm not excited about recommending it to everyone. Buy it and see how it goes.
Yeah, if you like it.
Don't
like it.
Yeah. Don't spend your last nickel on it.
No, this would not be the first comic of this week I would suggest you buy.
So. Exactly.
Next up, so it's a double buy, but.
Yeah.
It's a little squishy.
It's not double buy. It's
double buy.
Double buy.
Double buy, you know.
Yeah.
Next up is Secret Origins number one. The stories behind the world's greatest heroes.
Okay.
Go ahead, Eric.
All DC does is tell their origin stories over and over again. why do you need another book to do that? Can you answer me that?
Money?
That being said, this is not a terrible book.
No.
I think it's a, these are particularly good retellings of these origin stories, but how many times do we really need to see Superman's damned origin story?
No.
Or Robin's? Or, well, Supergirl's was the only one that was at least something I haven't seen 100,000 times.
Well, because he's Supergirl.
Yeah.
Superman's origin has been told 100,000 times. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could, off the top of my head, I could name 5 different iterations of it.
Yeah. Well, it's only because women are so unimportant.
Yeah, I like, these are executed well. I mean, the art in the Superman story is in particular, I thought was really, really good.
I think it's excellent in every one, even though it's, you know, a little bit on the generic side and here and there. It's still very nicely done.
And Dick Grayson looks, like a teenage girl in a couple of the shots.
Well, sometimes teenage boys look like teenage girls.
I guess that's true, especially when they're lithe acrobats.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got a little bit of the Bieber in him.
He does. He actually, yeah he does. Yeah, I mean, but it's not like any of this is, you know, crazy. Wow, this is so, other than the Supergirl story, just because that one hasn't been done to death.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know Dick Grayson's origin story. If you read comics, you know Dick Grayson's origin. You know Superman. Everyone knows Superman's origin. Everyone on Earth.
Yes.
Knows Superman's. And
there are Aboriginal tribes that know Superman's origin story.
Yeah, you could go to some guy in the middle of Australia and outback,
mm-hmm.
and you ask him, how do you know Superman? Oh yeah, the Kents, they found him in a spaceship.
Yep. Magical land of Kansas.
Last son of a dying world. Like, in all, like, Grant, that's why I like All-Star Superman so much. Grant Morrison gives it a page.
Yeah. That's,
here you go, that's all we need.
I think if you spend more than that, seriously.
Yeah. So, this is very, very well executed. They have the creative teams from, who are working on these books. Of these characters right now writing their origins, and they're done very well. The art is nice. It's just not that. I mean, I know this stuff. It's not that exciting. Like, can we get secret oranges of like actual characters that their origins are secret?
Don't you just love the title "Secret Origins" though? Like, it's so comic booky. It's awesome.
The cover of this is very comic booky.
Yeah, it's comic booky in the way like the Aquaman book is comic booky.
Yes, exactly.
But you know, I just think Secret Origins, it's very like Jack Kirby Golden Age, just like crazy hyperbole. You know,
yes. Considering none of these are secret.
No one. Yeah, Superman is a secret to no one. To everyone, literally no one.
Everyone who's heard of Superman knows exactly.
Yeah.
His origin.
You know, I think one of my favorite things about this book is how, in the Supergirl story, Krypton looks exactly like Eternia. Like Supergirl's mother, she looks exactly like a He-Man character. And there's even like a Beast guy, like in a tank behind them. I don't know.
Well, He-Man is Superman fan fiction. Did you know that?
It's sort of between that and Conan the Barbarian. That was why they created He-Man, is they wanted to do a Conan TV show. They decided he was not a good role model for kids.
No, Conan, the guy who rapes and murders people.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a good
role model. So they decided to make him blonde and cuddly.
Of course.
And questionable on the sort of, you know, sexuality scale there.
I think he's asexual.
You know, honestly, that would not surprise me.
That's my reading. But I can't buy this. I can't say, but this is not, I was hoping, I was thinking maybe there's a twist or maybe it's interesting in some way.
This is the kind of book that you buy for the art. I think that's really the beginning and end of it.
Yes, if you...
Or if you're a diehard DC fan.
Yeah, I don't... if they were unknown, like, very, like, characters that you don't read all the time, like, you know, lower tier characters, and you're there trying to boot them up with, like, these origin stories, I thought that that might be interesting.
Secret origin of the question.
Exactly. That actually would work.
Right.
But other than that, do not buy.
I can't get excited about it either. I almost don't want to say do not buy because I did enjoy it, but it's there's literally no reason to buy it unless you're entranced by the art.
Yeah, so that's a double do not buy.
Yeah.
Secret Orange is number one. And yeah, and unless you have never heard of the character of Superman before.
Or if you want to fillet Superman.
That's true. If you want to do that. That's it for DC. Our next book is our indie book of the week. It is Sovereign, number 2. Written by Chris Roberson, art by Paul Mayberry, color by Paul Mayberry, with Jordan Gibson and Brad Simpson, letters John J. Hill. This continues the same format, basically, as that first issue. We were kind of wondering if it would. And it definitely is getting that Game of Thrones vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Is still very strong.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly is, looking like, here, look, here's all these different crazy characters and cultures that are all, like, amalgams of real-world characters and cultures. And then they're all going to come together and stuff's going to happen. Power struggles, supernatural beings, you know, death. I liked it. I don't like it as much as that first issue.
I think it's definitely inferior to the first issue.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, the art is good still. I really like it. It's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But the story is just kind of a history lesson for the most part.
Right. There's no rising action. It's just slow and dull and almost, I mean, what do you take away from this issue? A couple of brothers get angry at each other.
Yeah.
And hey, these people go to a place.
The white people are getting closer to the brown people.
Exactly. That's what happened in this book.
Yeah.
Save yourself the time of reading it. I mean, it's...
In this, a trade, I'm sure this would work much better.
Yeah. I think it could, but I still feel like they're walking to the point a little too slowly.
No, there's a lot of stuff that does... I don't understand why it's necessary to be told.
Yeah. Like, I think the whole first segment... With whatever the hell they're called, the Untouchables,
right?
We learn literally nothing about them.
No, they just stop in stop in these places. Hey, look, everyone's kind of hungry, and then no one has food.
Yeah, it's exactly a complete. It might as well be a rehash of what happened to them in the last book. It was more interesting then. That time was more compelling.
Well, they fought stuff. They were fighting spirits and stuff. They were...
Yeah, but it was clear that exactly this, or at least they said it in prose or something.
Yeah, and...
I knew that they were the untouchable class that performed...
The funeral rites.
The funeral rites. Yeah, they don't need to show it again.
No.
That's what's frustrating about this.
No, in the middle portion, the only, like... The middle portion, you get, like, 3 pages of brothers fighting...
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of history. And the fourth page is, hey, look, white people have arrived. Mm-hmm. They scope out the big town. They're like, wow. It's like, look, here's something interesting. Oh, wait, issue's over. Then we get literally 4 or 5 pages of just all more history.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
These horse lords.
This person has been in their own head for so long. And they're not doing like a terrible job of this, but I don't know. I believe someone should give them some guidance on how to distill this a little bit better.
I really like the art, but
I enjoy it. I don't think it's as strong as it was in the last issue. It's not bad. It's very good.
No, I mean, those middle pages where the history lesson is going, the very beautiful landscapes and animals and all that stuff, that's very nice looking. And, you know, but it's just not much is happening.
Yeah, almost nothing happens.
I mean, you get, like, these little glimpses of interest, like you find that the queen is psychic.
She looks like a Miyazaki character, too.
Yes, she does.
It didn't occur to me in the last issue, but she completely looks like a Miyazaki character in this one. Psychic queen.
That's interesting. You get a glimpse that there's these people with powers in the big city, but which we have not seen a glimpse of before, but you don't get any more of it. Most of it is just kind of these banal conversations, which I'm interested in where the story's going, but this issue itself isn't that good.
No. It doesn't. It really does feels like a lot of time wasting and panning around and nothing. It's not really revealing a lot of character or inciting any action.
In a prose novel, you could get away with, like,
yes,
but you cannot do that in this. If you're releasing a serialized story, this doesn't work.
Exactly.
So I'm a sad do not buy.
Yeah, it is a little heartbreaking. We'll have to check back in and see about when the trade comes out, if they turn it around.
Yeah.
So I think I'm right there with you. I'm gonna tell people not to buy it, and I'm gonna cry.
Tears.
Mm-hmm.
It's running down her face.
Clearly.
So double do not buy at Sovereign number 2. A sad.
Do not buy and do not cry.
Ooh. Our first book of, we're going over Marvel, our first book is Guardians of the Galaxy number 14, double size anniversary issue in big comic booky font on the front.
That's the way to do it.
It is. This is, written by Brian Michael Bendis, pencils by Nick Bradshaw with Jason Masters and Todd Knock, inks by Nick Bradshaw, Walden Wong, Jason Masters and Todd Knock, colors Justin Ponser with Jason Keith, letters Corey Pettit. So there's roughly 50 million people worked on this comic book.
Well, I mean, it takes a village
to raise an idiot.
I'm fond of saying it.
I know you are. This is basically watching the team. I picked it up because, Agent Venom is front and center in this, on the cover.
Yeah.
And we're basically watching the team kind of disintegrate in this issue. There is some, I enjoyed the scenes with Drax and Venom and them trying to get weaponry and stuff, but I think that I like this, but the main problem with it is that you don't get enough time with any one character. I really enjoyed Star-Lord's interactions with his father. That was really cool, but it's only like 2 pages. And you get like 2 or 3 pages with everybody. And then they all disintegrate and disappear again. And
well, you understand it's incredibly important to have this this backup story. I have nothing against the group backup story, but the other one,
the group backup story,
the
is
Earth
cute.
3014. No, the group story is cute, but I think that's
Guardians.
Yeah,
who are going to travel back in time to?
That's the most retarded thing I've ever seen.
Ever?
Pretty close.
Are you saying you don't like, they look like Rob Liefeld characters?
They really do. Like this whole panel at the end
shows
them all, all smirking and standing.
Their feet are in dust. You can't see their feet.
Their feet are in dust. I never thought about that.
You can't see their...
Their hands are mostly obscured.
Yes. They're all making fists.
It's so Liefeld. It hurts me. It's funny.
I'm sure it's going to pay off. I'm sure they're trying to foreshadow stuff that's going to happen later on. I mean, having the main problem be, I wish there was more is not a bad problem. We haven't read a lot of Bendis written stuff because it's just so caught up in itself. It's hard to read it unless you're reading it all the time. And this, I think this is clearly designed as like a jumping on point. But I liked it enough. What do you think about Bradshaw's art?
Bradshaw is the first artist.
Yeah, he's the penciler.
I enjoy it quite a lot. It's I hate it when people just say detailed because it's kind of like they can't figure out any other way to describe it. But I do like the sort of the little details in the more mechanical details, I suppose I should say.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's interesting. And the figure drawing is very nice as well.
Yeah, he did Wolverine and the X-Men for forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they are moving him over to Guardians of the Galaxy because they rebooted Wolverine and X-Men with Jason Latour. But yeah, it's talky. Brian Michael Bendis, he writes talky books for the most part. People are always saying things. Like, it's not a lot of... You never get just, you know... Like the first page where Star-Lord is trying to sleep. You just get, you know, a lot of that. That, I think, is a good synapse, like, of how Bendis writes. It's just like...
Well, I think he's doing it. There's a point there. He's trying to, you know, like laying awake and you can't shut your brain off.
Yeah, yeah. But I liked it. I am a buy. I wish there was more Venom stuff because that's really what I wanted to see. But I'm sure we'll get some. I mean, you get a little bit of interesting, a question about the origin of the symbiote, which I'm kind of interested in. But I'd say I'm a buy.
There are things that interest me in this. I don't know if it's because it wasn't this $4.99.
There were
expensive books this time around.
I know. I did it on purpose. I looked at what's the most expensive. How much money can I make Eric spend in comics this week?
That is so true. You love that you have that power over me.
The power.
It's gonna go to your head there. No, it's a good book. I'm intrigued. I don't know if I'm gonna recommend it or not. You know, it's not really, I don't know. I want to see where it's going. I don't know. Until I read more of the next couple of books, then I'll know really where I'm going with it. Until then, I'm a weak buy, if anything.
Yeah, I think I'm on this ride as long as Agent Venom is there.
Yeah, that he's really my point of insertion as well.
I mean, I like all these, you know, I like the Guardian. I liked, Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning's Guardians of the Galaxy from maybe 10 years ago a lot. And this is most of the same cast. Bendis is not doing the same thing they did, but I enjoy all these characters. That the last backup story is pretty bad though.
It is the worst.
So I'm a buy on everything except that.
If you can rip this backstory off the book and get it for less, do that.
Yeah, that exactly. I agree. So that's a double buy.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy number 14. Just don't read that last, you don't even have to read it, honestly.
Eh.
If you just like to laugh at Rob Liefeld drawings, I guess it looks like Rob Liefeld at least. The next book in Marvel is another Zero issue. It's Original Sin number 0 of 8. This is kind of the prequel to the big event of the summer, which is Original Sin. We're going to see the Watcher get killed.
Who shot JR?
I know this is more kind of delving into the backstory of the Watcher, along with I'm sure introducing a lot of characters to the Sam Alexander, the young Nova. This is written by Mark Waid, pencils Jim Chung with Paco Medina, inks Mark Morales, Guillermo Ortega, Dave Mikus, Juan Velasco, and Jim Chung, colors by Justin Ponzer, letters by Chris Alopoulos. So about 6 million people inked it.
It takes that many.
Yeah. We see this young Nova fight this like
Aztec robot
who's probably a tool of like a big oil company. He kind of pals around. He gets to like hang out with the Avengers for a second, and then he goes and talks to the Watcher, and we get.
I mean, what kid wouldn't want to go to the moon?
I know. He goes to the moon and talks to the Watcher. You look into his base and kind of, it's a background story on the Watcher and his people and how they ceded technology and to some group and they killed themselves. And that's why they have this thing about do not interfere. They just watch. But then you get these kind of shots into this like multiversal reality friction device, whatever multiversal. There's like a whole bunch of very sci-fi terms in it. And Watcher's like watching every possible future and past at the same time and all that. We get a little character development, Nova. But this is really just to set up kind of background on the Watcher and what he's capable of, I guess, before he's, cause he, he's killed. I mean, it's certainly not a spoiler to say that because the cover of the first issue is, you know.
Yeah, who shot the Watcher.
Who shot the Watcher, which I really like the art on it. That cover. I liked it. It's not offensive.
Honestly, this is my favorite book this week. I had a blast reading it.
Really?
I have wanted to follow up on this kid Nova for a while, so I was actually excited to read. And I've always loved Nova. I used to read New Warriors when I was a kid. You know, I was reading New Warriors in the 90s, and he was a part of that, and I loved him then.
Yeah, that's, now, I liked that Nova. I don't know about this kid. Snot-nosed ragamuffin.
Well, you're a snot-nosed ragamuffin. You're a snot rag.
But the Aztec robot is a very Jack Kirby.
Same thing.
Asian,
right?
Aztec, same thing. I thought you wouldn't like this. I'm surprised.
I think the art is really handsomely done. I mean, it looks like a lot of stuff Marvel's doing now for their big events, but,
they tap Jim Chung. He did a lot in Infinity, so that's,
yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm getting. I have always liked The Watcher, and it's just, I don't know, he's an avenue of Marvel comics that I've always just, this weird, mysterious figure, and I like seeing more. I like the things that they're doing here, and I like this kid Nova. So really, I have no problem with anything they're doing here, and I kind of liked the whole. I just got to it. It's the Watcher's armory.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a particularly nicely done scene that he saw one thing that he recognized, and he's like this thing is incredibly powerful. I know what it is. What in the hell could all this other stuff possibly be? I liked that they did just enough to pique my interest on stuff like that. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. And I'm encouraged to see where it's going to go.
Okay. I'm certainly, it was good. I mean, it was, well, I mean, Mark Waid, Jim Chung, both are solid pros. They could probably write and draw respectively. Anything thrown at them. Like, here, this is what you're doing, now, do it. And they could handle it. And so, it shows in this that, I mean, none of them, I don't think either of them have been doing anything related to, Nova's been written by Jerry Duggan, up until now. And Jim Chung, basically, this is what they use him for, just he draws their event comics. In relation to this event, I don't know if any of this is,
if any of it matters.
Yeah. I mean, I guess is a dumb, like, a lot of people, like, that's a dumb question to ask about comics. Like, every comic story has to matter in the grand scheme of continuity or whatever.
Well, it's an event comic, you would kind of expect it to friggin' matter.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, I don't know if any of this is going to pay off in the actual series. But on its own, it is a nice, solid little story. So I'm a buy. I'm not as strong as buy as you are.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. No, I'm just going to surprise you and be like, nah, I'm just joking. This book's terrible. No, I did. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I'm a strong buy on it, and I'm looking forward to the event. It will probably not be, I'm curious if it's going to be a big seller or not.
They are pushing it. I mean,
I'm sure they are, but it's
tons of tie-ins.
It's kind of not a very sexy story. It's about a giant bald spaceman dying. Well,
there's actually not one, but two series. There's Original Sin and then Original Sins, which is another, it's a series running in, like, concurrently with.
Concurrently.
Yeah. It's a tie-in, but not the same.
What?
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. We'll check in on it, I'm sure. So that's a double buy, Original Sin number 0. Our last issue of the week, I know, surprise, surprise, and I surprised Eric with this one on, I was driving home.
I actually forgot about it and started closing my app.
Yeah, I just wanted to check it out. It's a new Elektra number 1, written by W. Hayden Blackman, who, quit working for DC after they fucked with his comic book. Batwoman is a bit, very controversial thing. Art by Michael Del Mundo. I read this. I was very impressed by it. and I said we should talk about it. I wanted to see what Eric thought about it, especially. I wasn't too excited about this, but I was like, well, like I've given most of these new number ones a shot just to see if I'd like the book. But I really, really like this. This is up there with Moon Knight and Black Widow. I think those are the other two ones that have stood out to me the most. I really like what they're doing with this book. The art is absolutely gorgeous. This kind of Elektra as this assassin who's, it ends with her going to Monster Island, you know, and this crazy guy who gets powers by eating people. That's really fun. And I repeat, the art is really beautiful.
Yeah, the art is very good. I don't know. I'm intrigued with it. I don't think I'm as high on it as you are. Mm-hmm. Like I'm having trouble getting excited about it. The art certainly does look better. I'm looking at it on my computer and I was looking at it on my phone earlier. Not as good a way to,
read comic books
to experience it, but it'll get you through the night. It doesn't excite me the way that it excites you.
Well, I was not interested in this book because I was like thinking, you know, Black Widow and Elektra are kind of similar. These femme fatales. And I wasn't sure if this would separate itself enough from that book. I think it's more focusing on, there's one I really like, multiple new characters in this.
Right.
There's this kind of like this, female character who looks like a flapper, who is, you know.
She talks like a flapper.
Talks like a flapper, looks like a flapper, you know.
Yep, probably, walks like a flapper.
But she's basically...
Probably a flapper.
Signs all these, you know, basically as a person assassins to go for targets. It's like a manager. But then it has this another assassin figure called Cape Crow, where we get to see him handle a team of Taskmaster, Bullseye, Sabretooth at one point, like in the past. And then we also get this current, like, assassin figure who's like a shadowy guy, wears a lion's head, and gets power from eating people, bits of people. So,
well, I mean, that does happen.
Is that how you get your power, Eric?
Well, it's how we all get it.
I don't eat
comfortable silence.
I don't eat people.
Well, you eat pork. It's the same thing.
But we have, like, that's three... I mean, in a lot of books, you just don't see new characters ever. Even incidental ones. It's just this call to bring in, other older characters. This is really refreshing to see that. Again, I really like the art. This is... excited me in a way I was not expecting. I really am excited about this book.
I should probably say something about the art. Do you know it... it does have a kind of humanoid sort of feel to it. Do you get that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very...
Not a lot of heavy line work. Assuredly it's done digitally.
Yeah, it's ethereal to a certain extent.
It has that kind of mushiness to it, but at the same time, everything is pretty well defined. It is very well done. It's got a very nice handling of color in that it is colorful, but the colors are not terribly obvious with the exception of, the red.
Yes. You know,
an Elektra color.
Yes.
And it's interesting that it seems like nothing but her. And even there are a lot of times where she's even not pure red. I would say that is the best thing about it. It is very rich art. And for me to compare it to humanoids, that's high praise from me. I'm into it. It's good. I'm just not blown away that was by a lot of other books in this sort of... I walked away from Black Widow feeling really, really into it. I mean, I'm intrigued. I want to see more. I think it's a good setup for a story, and I like the character that they're setting up. I like this villain that they're setting up. But I'm not terribly excited about it.
But what does that mean? Is that a buy or is that a do not buy?
You know, it's not so bad that I would say do not buy.
Doesn't cost $6.
Does not cost $6. Better than a lot of books we've read this time. So, I mean, this one just on the art alone is worth buying. And I think it's worth following up on as well. So, you know, I'm a buy, just not, I'm not overly enthusiastic about the buy. How about that?
Okay. I am an enthusiastic buy. Elektra hunting down assassins on Monster Island.
Just to be fair, she never actually gets there. She's plummeting towards it at the end of the book.
I assume that's where she'll land safely.
I
assume she won't die on impact.
She does. She's not using a parachute. Not very smart.
She has a glider. She might have a.
She's gonna glide right in that volcano.
There's a pack in there. Maybe there's a hidden parachute in there.
She just can't be burdened by parachutes.
I don't know. But that is a double buy. For Elektra number one surprise book of the week. Literally.
Surprise!
Surprise! Literally, we're reading this now. And that will be it for weekly floppies. I read Uncanny Avengers, by the way, Eric, it's very good.
Okay.
If you ever wanted to see, like, a half-cyborg abomination, read Uncanny Avengers.
Well, naturally, I'm dying to see that.
So, it was a lot of good, but I think that's the only other book I read this week. With that, it brings us to Nerd Boy Book Club.
Said that with such gusto.
I did. It is our segment where Eric and I will, it functions like a book club, in that we will choose something to read a week ahead, and we'll let you guys know, and you can read it with us, so send us thoughts and stuff. And we can talk about...
Send us stuff.
I mean, I'm not going to be too picky about it. Stuff. But this week we are doing Casanova, volumes 1-3 by Matt Fraction, with art by Gabriel Baugh and Fabio Moon in turn. They've announced a fourth volume of this recently, January at the Image Expo. They announced the fourth volume. They're starting work on that with Fabio picking up they're alternating. Did you know that they are twins, Eric?
Why are their names crazy?
Because they're artists.
Okay. Fair enough, said Eric Z. Goodnight.
I was going to say, I'm like, they're Brazilian artists. That is why their names are crazy. Yeah, we've been reading very heavy spy, military espionage stuff. It's been kind of dreary and dark. And this is a spy espionage story, kind of, in a very loose sense of the word. But it's very different feeling than Captain America or Max Nick Fury. How did you read this, Eric? Did you read it digitally?
No, I have.
You got the trades?
Yeah, I bought them at a real life comic book store.
Ooh, nice. But then you probably have the same ones. You have Back Matter, where the Fraction and the artists talk about their styles and the colors and all that stuff, but among that, they describe this book two words: weird and sexy. And I think those are probably good words.
I think that that does communicate something about this book. That's for sure.
It's hard to sum up precisely in a short synopsis, but
I have some words that I think can describe it.
But briefly, Casanova is the main character. He's this son of like a Nick Fury almost character, and he's kind of the bad seed of him and his sister. His sister works for their father, for this shield like organization, Empire. It's called
Empire Records.
Empire Records, and then very shortly into the story, he's kidnapped and put into a different time stream where he replaces a dead version of himself, where their roles were reversed, where his sister is the bad one, the bad seed, the black sheep. He becomes the good one to try and undermine his father by way of this evil group.
And it goes crazier from there. There's sexy spy bots and time travel and alternate dimensions and
crazy Modulok potato people.
Yes, they are. They're potato people.
There's cities powered by sex.
There's ecstasy cities. Yes. Basically. Where, yes, everyone just has, it's an orgy 24 hours a day.
And it makes electricity.
There's like a David Blaine / Alan Moore magician.
Well, you just said Alan Moore. You don't need to say magician.
That's a good point. That's redundant. That's
it true. Is. It is redundant. It's like saying tuna fish.
But I like tuna fish.
You can tune a piano, but you can't Alan Moore.
What does that mean?
Doesn't have to mean anything. I don't think so. Just let me be me.
Giant Japanese robots from World War II. There is a bit of planetary in this too, I think, with the kind of the remind, especially in that where they get to the quote unquote tribesmen on the forgotten island that are actually super advanced, and it's all a facade so that people don't investigate them.
Oh yes, I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on this, Eric? I've not read volumes 2 or 3 on this. I've read volume 1 before. What are your thoughts?
To be perfectly frank, I think it's got a lot of problems.
Ooh.
I mean, it's not like a disaster, but it is a little bit of a mess in my opinion. It feels like just so crazy and unfocused. There were some points where I was having a hard time kind of enjoying. I mean, it's not awful. But do you know what it is exactly? And I'm curious how you're going to react to this. But the thing that it reminds me of the most is the Meta Barons.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, it's just an insane dumping ground of weird ideas loosely based around some characters that just sort of ends in broad swashes of story and wholesale slaughter of people.
It's hard to argue those points. I agree with you on those points.
Because that's what happens in this book. It really feels like he's trying to pull out so many stops that it doesn't feel well structured. It's not horrible. Go ahead and what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say that actually it reminded me most of Next Wave.
Mm-hmm. I get that too.
Which is not crazy because Fraction is like a disciple of Ellis. So.
Yeah, right.
There's a tree. Ellis is on top. And then Fraction and, Kieran Gillen and Kelly Sue DeConnick and Sam Humphreys, multitude of writers who all kind of sprung out of that tree. They're stylistically not necessarily share a lot with Ellis, but obviously he helped get a lot of them into the business and, you know, get the publish for their first things. The strange thing I think is that the three volumes, the second volume is the first and third are both illustrated by Gabriel Baugh.
Mm-hmm.
The second is Fabio Moon, and the second is also the one that's most cohesive, I would say.
I think that is also the case, that I enjoyed it much more than the first book, and the third book felt a little bit like a disaster. I mean, it's kind of meant to. It's
just, yes, it is.
You know, everything's falling apart and the world's blowing up, but it's just so friggin' nuts that it just sort of loses all meaning.
Just it's
you can disagree with every bit of that.
I agree with some of it. I'm just trying to collect my thoughts in that it is incredibly chaotic.
Yeah,
and it is difficult to follow sometimes because I mean that's part of the story is that he's literally hunting down multiple versions of this same guy over, you know, dozens and dozens of time streams, alternate dimensions,
and universes. It's told, at least it feels like it's told out of order.
Some of it is, yes.
And it's that just makes it confusing as fuck. You know, you don't really know what's going on. I mean, the first book, and even the books aren't even numbered 1, 2, and 3. They just have names.
To be fair, that's
how the hell do you know what the hell you're reading? It's just like, show no mercy to your reader.
Well, that's not
Fraction. Fraction?
That's not Fraction's fault that they didn't put one of my volumes does have a number on the outside.
My number 3 has a number on it.
Mine too, but 1 and 2 do not have numbers.
Just have to know that when you count in Fraction, Luxuria comes before Gula. Luxuria means 1.
To be fair,
Gula means 2.
If you flip open the book, the first page, which has like the credits and the dedications, if on the left it says Casanova Volume 1, mm-hmm. Luxuria.
Well, you know what? 3 pages into the book is not what is on my shelf. The outside of a book is on the shelf.
So is that how you read the books? You just pick the one that says 1 on your shelf, and then you go to number 2 on your shelf?
Yes. Okay. That's how people buy them as well. This is why by the time they got to book 3, they're like, let's put a number on here.
Well, it's not his fault they didn't put numbers on the outside.
It's some dumbass's fault.
It's the person who runs Marvel's Icon line, which is not great. The Icon, you may notice Image is not, name isn't anywhere on this. Because they're doing the 4th volume with Image. This is these 3 have been republished by Marvel after Fraction had signed with Marvel by their Vertigo style, you know, line.
Right, their Vertigo.
Which is Icon.
I did not know that existed.
That's because they do a shit poor job at promoting and using it. Like, Vertigo is really well known and publishes good comic books. And that is one thing that DC does very well is like their whatever you want to call it, their creator owned imprint, Vertigo, is very popular and they publish a lot of good books with it. Marvel's basically publishes Brian Michael Bendis's stuff because he's under exclusive contract with him. You may know Distraction, when he's publishing creator-owned stuff, he does nothing through Marvel, does it all through Image. Gives you an idea of how well Marvel runs the show with their Icon line, which is not, they do not do a good job promoting or imagine or the deals with the creators for the most part. And I understand the wholesale violence and stuff, but that, again, isn't too far off from Next Wave either, because Next Wave is quite violent at certain points, but a lot of time they're just killing robots, so you don't see as much blood. There is a lot of sex in this book as well.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's, that's fine. That doesn't bother me.
I know it doesn't bother you. I think it's worth bringing up.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of nudity.
It is a high point in this book, you know, the doing it. Yeah. And I thought that was I don't know. I would have almost preferred something a little bit more mundane. Like it almost like the Meta Barons, they just introduce things.
Right.
You know, like all of a sudden he's got psychic powers. Like the guy attacks him with a gun and he magics it apart. Unless I am illiterate, I don't think that was really well set up before that moment. That's just sort of the way Yodorowsky would introduce things. It's a writing style, I guess. It's people do it. It's not like Fraction invented that.
No, but I find it interesting that you think you don't like this as, or you.
I think it's interesting that I can, like the other person I would compare it to is Brandon Graham.
And yet, you're not as nearly strong as you are about those two people that you.
Yeah, you know. Isn't that weird? Like, two people that I adore, and I think that, I don't know, after reading this, I think I empathize with you a little bit more about not liking the Meta Barons. I think, and you didn't hate it, you know?
No.
I think you are to the Meta Barons what I am to this book.
I kind of want to like it more. It is incredibly chaotic. And I think
part of that is it's hard to read. It's very dense. And
it's crazy dense.
It's very, very dense. There's a lot of information presented on in every page. You really have to take your time and read you have to read carefully. Cause there are,
it kind of doesn't matter if you read careful because it's still fucking crazy.
Well, it is fucking crazy, but they do present with some information, beforehand, but you're like, where did that come from? Or why is this happening? And then you go back, that thing on that one page I'm supposed to. I do find it a little, his sister's character is a little, is inconsistent.
Yeah.
And that's probably my biggest complaint about the book. Although it's hard to say because a lot of the times it seems like she's just conning people. Like that's all she's doing is just playing long cons on everyone. And if she's just playing people, playing a part at certain points or not, it's hard to say. But, like, she's almost like an incestuous sex pot in the first volume. But then in the second and third, she becomes a much more, like, sympathetic figure. I mean, and everyone in this book is having sex almost all the time. So that's not unique. It's the fact that it's, like, her brother from a different dimension. It's a little weird. But it's hard to say why she's just doing this to play him.
You know, I think like the Meta Barons, it almost feels like everyone's motivation is like it's rooted in dream logic that no one, they don't feel really like characters or people. I mean, maybe Casanova does when he's complaining about being the worst killer in the history of everything.
I mean, Casanova is Fraction.
Uh-huh.
Fraction's even going to say like, this is thing that he's most self-invested in, his one creation that he himself is in the most. You can definitely see it. Especially in the third volume, they talk about like addiction a little bit, cocaine, and Fraction was at that point sober, recovering alcoholic. He's still sober, but I think at that point he was like, Stephen King talks about writing The Shining. Like, he was super addicted. He was a cokehead, crazy, like, psychotic. And it's evident, reading The Shining, that there's things deeper at work here. And it's some of it may be just Fraction working through things like that, personal issues, which I can see. You can see it in there. But I still like it a lot. It's really funny and crazy. And it hits, he calls it, he even talks about this in some of the aftermatter, about how it's like an espionage book, sort of, but he just says, it's just a way for me to write whatever I want.
That's kind of what bothers me about it, is I don't really care that it's crosses over so many genres, it just feels so unfocused, that it's hard for me to enjoy it.
What do you think about the art? About Gabriel Bob versus Moon.
See, that's interesting. I definitely enjoy Ba more than Moon. He's got that sort of Mike Mignola sort of heavy shadows and stylization and weird skin. But he's freer, you know.
He drew BRPD.
Yeah,
all the time, so
that feels very right to me, but. Mignola is very sort of stiff and rigid compared to Ba. Ba is almost a little unhinged in comparison. I think Moon is talented, and I enjoyed, I think his art helped shape the book a little bit more. The story was easier to follow, and having the characters and storytelling be a little bit more concrete with his work.
Mm-hmm.
I think helped make it a better book. I do think that there's just something about the way the characters are handled that I enjoy Ba more.
Okay. That's interesting. I actually like Moon more myself.
So tell me about that.
I don't know if it's necessarily they're prettier.
Mm-hmm. Like, they look nicer. They're not, you know,
they don't all look like Hellboy?
No, they don't all look like Hellboy. They look, the women look gorgeous. The men look, I mean, like, they're not ugly. Like, Casanova is supposed to be, this handsome kind of.
Well, I've never seen him as anything. He's fucking Mick Jagger.
He is Mick Jagger. That is 100%.
Yeah, 100% Mick Jagger.
I mean, if you weren't gonna say that, I was gonna say that.
No, but I think you could read this book in the Braille edition and be like, this guy's Mick Jagger.
Yeah, but even like this, what is this character's name? Why can't I think of it right now? The guy with the crazy anime hair.
Oh, the guy that's named after a torture manual.
Yes, the one who's named after the torture manual. Kubark Bende.
Yeah, what the hell?
He kind of looks like Benicio del Toro with anime hair.
Yeah, with terrible Wolverine hair.
Yes.
He's a terrible character design.
He's Kubark, easily identifiable in silhouette.
That's true. That is important. Your characters should look different.
Yep. And then they do have the Alan Moore magician. Oh, wait. Alan Moore. Escape artist.
You're right.
Or David X, whose name is in the book. But, I mean, it looks like Alan Moore.
Yeah.
Like a young Alan Moore, basically.
Alan Moore is going to meditate for 12 years and then become Super Buddha.
Yes. But I liked his art the most. Mainly, I think it's just prettier. And I don't necessarily know, that doesn't mean it's better, but I liked it mm-hmm. more.
So it's just something to say about art that it's more appealing. You know, people talk about appeal in drawing and cartooning. And when something is not appealing, but still really well executed,
yes.
Which I think, and I don't particularly think that Gabriel Ba's art is not appealing. To me, it is very appealing. Like, I like the way he draws women and a lot of different things, but, I think when something is less appealing, but still technically excellent, then I think you have to be more of an artist to be drawn to it or to really, I don't know, for it to work for you.
No, I like Gabriel Ba a lot. I have a Umbrella Academy, mm-hmm. which he did both volume 1 and 2 of that.
I remember being very impressed with the art in that. I do not own a copy though.
I think Fraction used this just as saying, you know, I want to tell a crazy story and do whatever I want with it.
Yeah, and I think that's fine.
And I think that a lot of it is just very kind of insane kind of experimental storytelling. Especially the third one. The first two are fairly straightforward. I mean, the first one's
Well, if I hadn't read that third one, I don't think I'd be calling them straightforward.
Well, the second one is certainly straightforward for the most part.
Well, I would. If I had
sequentially, there's a little messing. I mean, that's part of the storytelling, though. It's like, hey, we jump around in time. It's no different than like a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
But
I was just saying that had I not read 3, I would say 2 is more straightforward than 1. 1 is not terribly straightforward.
1 is not as straightforward as 2, but it's certainly more straightforward than 3 is.
Yes. 3 is hard for me. I still enjoyed 3, but it is a big flaming exploding mess.
Yeah. It is, but I think that's by design.
It doesn't feel quite like an accident.
No, there's a scene where there's a guy naked except for a polar bear skin running through snow.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be one of many scenes that are literally. Come on, Eric.
I don't know how you're gonna, I don't know if you're gonna misuse it or not.
Okay. I wanted to try and.
You wanted to bait me?
I wanted to... baiting! And there is literally a scene in the third where we actually do... I mean, might as well be Matt Fraction himself, like...
Yeah, the comic book signing
comic books. But and there is a lot of, like, self-referential humor shit. Like, I mean, literally, there at one point, a delivery man shows up from MacGuffin Delivery Service.
Yes.
And says, here's a box, open it.
It's pretty metafiction too.
Yeah, it is.
There's a lot of times in the first book they keep saying the word comic book, and then not too long after that they're like, we're in a comic book.
Yeah, and like at one point near the end of one of these, the villain, he's like, you guys, this book's almost over, and we haven't done what we need to do, so hurry up.
Yeah.
Well, soon, Eric, there will be a fourth volume of this coming out.
I can't imagine what in the hell Volume 4 could even be about.
Well, he is...
The third one is just like the screaming end of everything.
Yeah, well, because he lands at the end of it, he lands in our world. That's basically what's happening. He's in our universe. Fraction, did you read any of the Aftermatter? Or some of it?
Some of it I did. I didn't read every single word of it.
Because apparently he had this in mind, that it's a trilogy followed by one or two, like, standalone stories with another trilogy after.
Huh.
Volume 4, this probably be something he does for his whole life.
No permission given to Mr. Mick Jagger.
Really, if Mick Jagger read comic books, I'm sure he'd want a portion of it.
So, does that mean this book is Mick Jagger versus David Bowie?
It kind of is. I mean, that guy at the end, I mean...
Yeah, he's fucking...
Luther Desmond Diamond.
Yeah.
Is,
even Diamond.
Yeah, this is a lot of... At a certain point, it becomes insane self-referential. Like, there's the whole sequence on the boat near the end where they're just... He's just speaking in stereotypical, like, quip. Like, it's not even hyperbolic auto commentary, self congratulations, cheap and easy juvenile bullshit, pandering.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what that's supposed to mean.
I think, again, it's just Fraction, like, going, I think this is funny, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, that's how it felt.
That's probably a lot of this is just Fraction. I think this is funny, I'm going to do it. No one's going to stop me. But I think that brings our discussion to a close. It's certainly an interesting book. I like it a lot. I know Eric's. Would you suggest people read it, Eric?
I could think of specific people I would recommend it to. I would recommend it to my friend Derek I went to art school with that introduced me to the Meta Barons.
Ah.
He would enjoy this, but just because it's insane and he loves insane things.
Yeah. And there's a certain charm in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a lot of interesting, like, crafty sort of stuff in here, the way that the story is told. Sometimes it's to its own detriment, but I think it's still interesting to kind of partake in. But that is Casanova, volumes 1-3 by Matt Fraction.
Don't you mean volumes Luxuria through Avarita?
Shut up. 1-3, Matt Fraction, Gabriel Ball.
You shut up!
Fabio Moon. Volume 4, they'll start work on that soon. We'll be getting that. We'll read number 1 of Volume 4, Eric. See how it feels. See where it goes. Could be anywhere. There's, like, literally nothing that would surprise me.
Well, there probably is something that could surprise you, but still.
Like, it was just a story about Dracula.
That would be weird. He gets his crotch frozen and kicked off.
Another planetary callback.
Yeah.
Okay, so folks, next week we are doing Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. He's written several of these books about kind of the basics of comic book storytelling. It should make for some interesting reading discussion. Especially it'll ground us before episode 52 Spectacular, season ending State of the Comics.
Yep.
Universe. Who better to talk about it than me and Eric?
Clearly, we are the masters.
Masters. Cat master.
Yep, you're the cat master. I'm the master baiter, I guess. You didn't know that about me, that I loved fishing?
I didn't. I did not know you were a fisherman.
Yeah. It's good news.
I knew you were a seaman, but I didn't know you were that type of seaman.
Hey, man. You know how it is. Oh, banter.
No, witty banter. So, folks, with that, we'll bring us to a close. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at HandsomeBoysComicsHour.com every day.
We post every new episode there. Every episode we've ever done is available there, streaming and downloadable. You can find us on iTunes. Search for Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You'll find us and only us. Leave us a good review. Subscribe. Both of those things get us more listeners. We like more listeners, and so should you. You can have more people to talk about us with. Right?
It's important to have a huge crowd of people making fun of us at all times.
At all times. We have a Facebook, facebook.com/Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You like us there. See your every episode pop up in your feed. You don't have to go looking for it. Pop comes to you.
Comes to you.
Comes to you. We're also on Twitter at HBC Hour, or on Tumblr at handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. Sure, we're other places. Nothing I can think of. You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. And I'm on Tumblr at the same name. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can see my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. See a collection of most of the things I get up to at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. Just point your Twitter machine at Mr. Bad Example. That's spelled M-R Bad Example.
So, folks, with that, have a good one.
Rock and roll.
Kitty, you're in the way.
Bread golems.
Oof. Difficult. That's tricky. Yeah. That's tricky business.
I know.
There.
As a keto knight, that is my that's my weakness.
Have you done war with like rabbis?
Well, they do like to holla at me.
Wow.
It's gonna be more than